Welcome in, everybody. You're listening to Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Hot in the Igloo is live right now at 5 p.m. Live on the airwaves. I'm here with Ethan Estrada, Forrest Hunt, and we have quite a bit to talk about. We have not been on the air in 2 weeks, Ethan. Last week we were out at the softball field doing a couple of softball games, and there's been a lot of softball since then. Actually, the girls are playing right now. They won game one against Notre Dame de Namur, a score of 8-1. And right now in the second game, I would have to guess that they're leading that one too.
Yeah, and I think that was a much-needed victory, especially after a tough homestand. You face Azusa Pacific, Biola, and then you finish it off with one of the best teams in the country with Concordia Irvine. So I think this is a much-needed win to help gain some confidence back, because it's not like they've been out of every game. I think in most of the games, they've been either had the lead or down by at least two runs until the wheels just come falling off. There was one Biola game, the second game against Biola on the second day. They were winning 3-1 in the sixth inning, and they ended up losing 6-3. Same thing against Concordia Irvine, winning 3-0 and ended up losing 6-3. So it's not like they've been down and out by large margins majority of the time. They just can't find a way to close out the game.
You mentioned that Concordia game, and you and I were out there early in the morning last week on Thursday, I believe, for that game, and 9 o'clock start, and they looked really good against the starter for Concordia. Of course, it was not Callie Nunez. So Callie Nunez did end up coming into that game, and once she did, the Penguins actually had a lead when she came in, and then she just shut down the Penguin offense, which was sputtering to begin with, but it was able to pick up a couple of runs on Concordia, who is the number three team in the country.
And you might hear a lot about Callie Nunez, and you're like, is she really that good? She really is that good. Everything she throws just looks like it floats out of her hand. Rise ball, drop ball, curve ball, fastball, none of it's straight. All of it is a blur. And honestly, she looks like she's having fun out there. So once she came in, the Penguins had no shot, but they were able to get runs early, and that is a good thing. Caritza Reyes with a huge two-run double, hitting it over the left fielder's head. She needed that, because even though she struggled, she's still going to give you a really good at-bat, but you can only give people a good at-bat for so long until you finally cash in, and she did that big time against Concordia.
Only a few Dominican sports going on. Right now, as semester's winding down, Ethan, we should let those at home know that this is our final show of the semester. It's really sad. I don't want it to end for many, many reasons.
Yeah, especially next year being our last.
I don't know if we should even mention that. But the show will be back next semester, I'm assuming, as long as everybody's going to come back, which I think we are. But there's, you know, tennis going on right now. The golf championships were today, and the final round was today, and Nick Rivera, a Penguin faithful, was leading going into today, and those championships are over.
Yep, Nick Rivera going into the final round today, I believe, was shooting 4 under. Went into today, shot 6 over. Shot 6 over and fell all the way down to 7th place on the singles side of things. And then on the team side of things, Dominican was leading going into today. They had a 1-stroke lead over Holy Names, but shot 8 over to fall to 3rd place and giving Holy Names their first championship in athletics history. The first time any one of their athletic programs has hoisted that PacWest trophy.
It was exciting. I know you and I, who I am a very avid golf watcher, you're getting there, it seems, after the Masters really piqued your interest. And you were paying closer attention to the PacWest Championships down at Wigwam in Arizona than I was. And you were actually the one that told me, hey, Nick Rivera's leading by a couple of strokes. And, you know, we're going into the final day and we're leading. And I was thinking, oh, my, you know, we got to watch this. We got to keep a close eye. And then, you know, you kind of broke my heart when I came into radio today and you broke the news to me.
Yeah, and I think the reason why I'm starting to be a little bit more fascinated with golf is because I've played football and had some success. I played baseball, had some success. I can't play golf. I can't. So just watching people do something that I know I can't do extremely well is so fascinating to me. And I think that's why the Masters kind of turned me on to golf a little bit. But yeah, but it was disappointing that they weren't able to get it done. To finally put a new banner up in the Conlon Center would have been nice, but they gave it their all, and just unfortunately that final day was unkind to them.
Probably pretty warm down there in Phoenix. Tennis going on right now, softball going on right now, golf going on right now here at DU, and we have a couple of softball games coming up. We have one home game scheduled, or two home games I should say, scheduled for this coming Monday. But unfortunately, if you're ready for that broadcast, I don't believe there will be a broadcast that day. It's right in the middle of the day, and all three of us do have classes that day. But we will be out there on May 4th, which is senior day, to say goodbye to the seniors and have our last softball broadcast of the season.
Yep, and that is against Art U, so that should be an interesting matchup for Caritza Reyes and Alexis Chinchilla. Their final game here at Penguin Field. That would be a little heartbreaking to see them go, because they've done so well wearing a Penguin uniform and means so much to this team, and we've had the pleasure of watching them year in and year out. So it's gonna be rough losing two very professional players, and I like to use that word professional because that's exactly what they are. They are the heart and soul, they're the backbone of this team, so losing them is going to be big. But now next season is when you start to see who can step up, who can take their spot. And of course, we have good players like Mackenzie Schumacher who could step into those shoes, but those are definitely big shoes to fill.
They will be big shoes to fill, and that game is May 4th. We'll have that for you right here at radio.dominican.edu against Academy of Art. And a little bit of Academy of Art news coming up later in the show. We have a special appearance here today, and it'll be an interview later on at 5:30, so in 23 minutes you'll want to make sure that you're tuned back in to Penguin Radio for our interview. It's going to be a phone interview today with a seasoned veteran guest here on Penguin Radio. But until then, you know, tomorrow, for those of you that don't know, is probably one of Ethan Estrada's favorite days of the year, and he's going to tell us why.
Oh, tomorrow is the NFL draft, and there is only one thing that I love more than baseball and football regular season, and that is baseball and football off season. I love the tinkering behind the scenes, the contracts, the drafting, the scouting. I love all of that, and tomorrow begins the NFL draft, and this is probably the most uncertainty of a number one pick that we've had in a very, very long time.
I don't know what you're talking about, Ethan. Most of us, including me and those listening at home who haven't been paying close attention, believe that Kyler Murray is going to go number one overall to the Arizona Cardinals.
But that's the thing. Last year, the Arizona Cardinals supposedly drafted their franchise quarterback in Josh Rosen. So do you really want to take back what you promised somebody, that they were going to be the man? They were going to be that person to lead you out of this quote-unquote funk that you've been in for the last couple of years, only to take that chance away from them for like, oh, I'm sorry, this guy's just better than you are. With Kyler Murray, and of course, Kyler Murray decided not to sign with the Oakland Athletics to enter the NFL draft because he thought he had a good chance of going number one overall. And even though it looks like the Cardinals might be leaning his way, it's still not a full, yeah, that's the way they're going. Like, I'm an Indianapolis Colts fan, and 2012, when it was between RG3 and Andrew Luck, and a week before the draft, the Colts came out and said, we're taking Andrew Luck with our number one pick. It was like, nice, because I'm a Stanford football fan. So both of those things going together was absolutely perfect. And of course, last year, the Cleveland Browns, everybody says Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold's going number one overall. No way they're picking anybody else. Sam Darnold. They picked Baker Mayfield number one overall, and that was a really good choice because Baker Mayfield shocked the world by actually being really good. So it shows you that there's a lot of history for the number one pick, and there's a lot of uncertainty also. There could also be a lot of surprises. I just love the NFL draft. It is so much fun. And of course, Forrest, you're a big college football guy, so you must be a lot more familiar with these names than I am.
Yeah, I'm familiar with a lot of the names, and watching the guys in college, you know, like you said, you're the NFL guy. I'm the NCAA guy for sure. You know, that's all I do on Saturdays from end of August to January. So, I mean, college football, you know, I watch these guys play. And, you know, the top three supposed picks in the draft, Kyler Murray, Quinnen Williams, and Dexter Lawrence, I believe.
I don't know.
Nick Bosa. You know, yeah. You have four defensive linemen that we're talking about, five even, because if you look at the projected top five, you have Kyler Murray going to the Cardinals. Then you have Nick Bosa, who pretty much forewent his senior year at Ohio State to get ready for the draft, even though he says that's not true. He got hurt and he able to come back. We'll see. Quinnen Williams from Alabama, the kid's a sophomore. I mean, he's a game wrecker, and they have him going to the Jets. And, I mean, if you stack him up with
Sheldon Richardson
and Leonard, am I saying that right? The DN for the Jets.
Well, we gotta consult our buddy Chaz on this one.
Yeah, I forget his first name. Man. Who am I thinking of? Leonard?
Oh, yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about. I just don't remember his name, but I know Sheldon Richardson's their other big defensive tackle.
And they'd have three big guys in the trenches. You know, Quinnen Williams from Alabama on that Alabama team that got smoked by Clemson in the national championship game. Quinnen Williams kind of got locked up, but he's the guy that you circle on the scouting report. He's huge. I mean, he's one of the bigger interior linemen. He's quick, though. You know, those interior linemen that are quick, they're game wreckers, man. You know, they're 300-plus pounds, and they're fast off the ball. Ed Oliver is another guy that they're saying is going to go to the Raiders. DN, kind of a hybrid outside linebacker. DN, similar to what Khalil Mack was. Now, they're not comparing him to Khalil Mack. He's not a Khalil Mack clone, but they're saying he's just as disruptive, whether you're going to put him down in the three-point stance on the defensive line or if he's just going to edge rush. And then you have Josh Allen, who's a D-end outside linebacker from Kentucky that is supposed to go to the Buccaneers. That's what they're predicting. And that is a great pick. 17 sacks last year. Very good. Played in a very tough conference in the SEC. He was SEC Defensive Player of the Year last year. Best defender. I mean, if he's SEC Defensive Player of the Year and you have guys like Quinnen Williams that you're going up against, you have to be pretty damn good if Quinnen Williams is projected to go 2 overall.
Okay, there's one name that I want to get your take on because he was actually placed fairly high in the draft early on. They actually had him early on going to 6 to the Giants because of the way Eli Manning's performing, and that's Dwayne Haskins. He's fallen off of a bunch of people's draft boards, and I honestly don't know why because I watch him play at Ohio State. The arm strength isn't too strong like you'd want to see from a franchise quarterback, but he makes the safe play.
So your question again for me?
What is your take on the Dwayne Haskins? What do you see in him as a football player? Do you think he's franchise quarterback material?
I don't like Dwayne Haskins. You know, Dwayne Haskins, he has a good arm. He puts up big numbers, but he was at Ohio State. You know, Ohio State's a place where when you have Urban Meyer as the head coach there, who is no longer the head coach there, Urban Meyer recruits. It's like college basketball and wanting to play for Coach Krzyzewski or for Coach Calipari. It's just where you go because of the coaches, right, and the history. Ohio State has had a good history. Urban Meyer is the head coach. Who wouldn't want to play there? And Dwayne Haskins was behind guys, you know, like Cardale Jones and JT Barrett and guys like that who were at Ohio State before him. And he, in my opinion, is the lesser of all of those quarterbacks. You know, his numbers don't show that. He had a great supporting cast at Ohio State. Okay. Kyler Murray, best dual threat quarterback in the draft. No question. Dwayne Haskins, he's a big arm. But like I said, a lot of athletes all over the field. He plays at Ohio State. They're going to have athletes. They're going to compete. Daniel Jones is the guy that gets my attention when you're talking about quarterbacks in the draft. He's a guy out of Duke, okay? You don't hear a lot. When's the last time you heard of a quarterback out of Duke?
Never.
Never, okay? He's all right speed-wise. He has more athleticism than Dwayne Haskins. He's a lot taller. You know, Jones is, you know, 6'4", 6'5". whereas Dwayne Haskins is, what, 6'2", 6'3"? And he's a bigger guy, Haskins is. He doesn't run very well. And I'm not talking about, like, being a running quarterback. I just mean sliding in the pocket, you know? Daniel Jones has a little bit of, like, Manning-esque to him. Eli, that is, you know, like the lanky kind of quarterback, whereas Dwayne Haskins isn't as big as Big Ben, but he kind of moves like Big Ben. He sloshes around in the pocket. He can get outside the pocket. He can throw on the run, but I just think Daniel Jones, in my opinion, is the best quarterback in this draft. You know, I think whoever gets Daniel Jones, which right now it looks like he's projected to go to the Giants, which was who Dwayne Haskins, ironically, was initially supposed to go to right after the college football season ended. And I just think whoever gets Daniel Jones is getting their franchise quarterback. You know, he's going to play behind Eli Manning. He'll learn a lot from Eli. There's no question. You know, save your comments about Eli. He'll learn a lot from him. And I think he's going to be the guy that a lot of people go, Daniel Jones, where did he go to school? You know?
Yeah, it's going to be the Jimmy Garoppolo effect. And then another quarterback right here in this mock draft that I'm looking at, Daniel Jeremiah, who's now the head of scouting for NFL Network and NFL.com. He's their man for this stuff now. Has Drew Lock, quarterback out of Missouri, going to Green Bay with the 30th overall pick. I think that's an interesting pick, not only for the Packers, but because we've heard quite a bit about Drew Lock, but I haven't really seen a lot of Drew Lock.
Yeah, Drew Lock was really good at Missouri. Again, SEC. You know, you're playing in the SEC. You're playing against, you know, the biggest, baddest football conference in the nation. And Drew Lock was consistent there. He was really good at Missouri. You know, his name is one of those names. It's like a Daniel Jones, where unless you're a Missouri fan, you don't know who Drew Lock is, you know? And when you're playing in the SEC and you have guys like Tua Tagovailoa, you know, overshadowing you, and Joe Burrow, the freshman quarterback at LSU, getting more airtime and more press than, you know, not Andrew Luck, but Drew Lock at Missouri. You know, if you're not at one of those big time SEC schools, you're not going to get any recognition. You know, same with, you know, guys like Kentucky. You know, Kentucky last couple years has produced some great running backs, but you don't hear about them. You hear about the Eddie Lacy's, and you hear about, you know, who's there right now? Harris.
Josh Jacobs, and that's another
guy. Right. Josh Jacobs, you know, he was the third back in that and emerged as the second back for Alabama ahead of Najee Harris. But, you know, he's second or third back, and he's one of the better running backs in college football.
Yeah, actually, I wanted to ask you about Josh Jacobs because he's actually projected to go in the first round, lower first round. Right now he's projected to go number 24 overall to the Raiders.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to test a little bit because I've also heard that the Colts have had some interest. The Chiefs have had some interest. He's actually a really hot name right now entering the first round of this NFL draft.
Yeah, Damian Harris's name was a little more tossed around at the beginning of the season because he was a starting running back at Alabama. And Najee Harris, who actually went to Antioch High School here in the Bay Area, was their number two. And then Jacobs just kind of emerged, especially people started to know who Jacobs was in the college football playoff semifinal game against Oklahoma, and where he just leveled an Oklahoma linebacker. I mean, Jacobs, you look at him, and he's not really that big of a guy. He's not an Eddie Lacy type of guy or Derrick Henry when you're talking about Alabama running backs. More like a Kenyon Drake. But you look at him, and he's got a little Saquon to him. He can run over you, but he'll just fly right by you, too. He doesn't have world-class speed, you know, when we're talking about guys like, you know, Chris Johnson. He's not a Chris Johnson, but he's also not Derrick Henry when it comes to just running over you and shoving you to the ground. He's a bit of a mixture. I like Jacobs, and especially if he goes to the Raiders, that'll be a pretty good pickup for the Raiders in the first round. Whoever gets him, it's kind of like that going back to the Daniel Jones thing. It's a guy's name who's being thrown around now, but, you know, when you look at the big board coming out of the college football season, he may not have been that high up on the big board.
And then I got two more questions for you. Clelin Ferrell, or was it Christian Wilkins?
Wilkins, yeah. Both from Clemson.
Both from Clemson.
Best D-line in the country last year. Clelin Ferrell and Christian Wilkins. Wilkins and Ferrell kind of took over the spotlight when Clemson's D-line got in a little bit of trouble.
Dexter Lawrence was suspended last year.
Yeah, Dexter Lawrence couldn't play in that game. Who's another name? That's another name. But I believe, I don't think he's entered the draft. But Cleveland Farrell is, you know, a guy off the edge who is a lot like Dexter Lawrence in a way for size, but he's very quick. And Wilkins in the middle is just your big body. I mean, he'll take up two blocks. He frees linebackers in the A gap, in the B gap. He'll take on two blocks and shed them and tackle for loss. That's just how Wilkins is. He's a nitty-gritty guy. That whole Clemson D-line, you know, you could almost put their names in a hat and kind of pull it out, and whichever guy you get, you'd be happy with. Between Lawrence, Furl, and Wilkins, I really like both of those guys, and I think they should be up there with the Quinnen Williams and the Nick Bosa's of the world. You know, Nick Bosa had a lot of publicity with his name, I think a lot because of his brother Joey and the comparisons to his brother, but he didn't play his senior year. You know, so when a guy doesn't play, I'm going to take Cleveland Furl or, you know, Wilkins first. I mean, those guys showed out in the college football playoff. They just did. They shut down Notre Dame offensively. They shut down Alabama. And they were, you know, they say defense wins championships. And, you know, that defense, when you shut down Alabama's offense, you know, nothing else needs to be said.
And then my final question for you regarding the NFL draft. Most underrated player going into this NFL draft?
Julian Love, All-American cornerback out of Notre Dame. Yes, hit me with your my bias. Julian Love, best corner in the country. Set a record for most pass breakups in school history. At a school that's rich in that kind of stuff. Guy played very well. You know, as a freshman, he was playing. Got hurt in the semifinal game last year against Clemson. And when he was in the game, Trevor Lawrence was something like, 3 for 9 for less than 80 yards, no touchdowns. And when Julian Love was out of the game, Trevor Lawrence was like, 16 for 22 for 290 yards and 2 touchdowns. So you're talking about Trevor Lawrence, who last year a lot of people thought was the best quarterback in the country, just how he played in the playoffs as a freshman. And I think that that stat alone says a lot about the presence that Love has on the field. When you have 22 attempts to that side of the field when he's not on the field, and only 8 or 9 when he is on the field, that's a guy that you don't want to throw at, apparently. I mean, that's what the numbers show. And I think he's, in my opinion, the most underrated player.
Well, thank you for letting me pick your brain on the NFL draft. I don't know much about collegiate football, but I definitely know a lot about the NFL. And hopefully my Colts get somebody good. I'm just pumped for tomorrow, one of my favorite days of the year. And I make sure I watch it on TV. There's no tuning into the draft on the radio, because you just never know what's going to happen.
So let me ask you, do you think that Kyler Murray is going number one overall? Because nothing is in the bag yet. You know, Cliff Kingsbury, the head coach down there in Arizona, he likes guys like this. He likes the guys with Kyler Murray's skill set. He was at Texas Tech with Mahomes, right? We saw how Patrick Mahomes turned out. So we know the style that Cliff Kingsbury likes. But like you said, they took their franchise quarterback last year in Josh Rosen. It didn't pan out. Sometimes it happens, you know? I just don't know. There are so many quarterbacks that have been taken number one overall that have sucked.
Yeah. I'm a Colts fan. We've had plenty of those.
I mean, the dual threat quarterback that comes to my mind, you know, come out of college, dual threat quarterback, number one overall pick, and just stunk it up in the NFL. Are you reading my mind?
Cam Newton?
No, Cam Newton's half decent. Jamarcus Russell.
Oh, yep, LSU, one of the worst busts in NFL history.
07 draft, Raiders took him number one overall. Garbage.
Yeah, well, I don't think Cam Newton's very good either, and his attitude doesn't help a bunch. But, yeah, I completely understand. But what I see with the Cardinals is it takes too much sense to take Kyler Murray. He fits your new offense perfectly. And it's not like Josh Rosen could go in there and do a pretty fine job with the offense, but he's much more of a pro-style quarterback. And the way Kingsbury likes to play offense is not a pro-style offense. He's a Big 12 offense. That's just spread them out and gun it down the field as far as you can and pray that somebody's open. And when it comes to that, Kyler Murray is probably the best prospect that fits the Arizona Cardinals and what they want to do. And even Josh Rosen coming out of college, I thought he was the better out of him and Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold, I thought, made too many mistakes, too many simple mental mistakes. Because I might not know much, a lot about college football like you do, but I'm a Pac guy. I'm a Stanford guy, so I watch a lot of Pac-12 football. Josh Rosen, very much a pro-style quarterback, will not fit the new offense of the Arizona Cardinals, so I think they have to go Kyler Murray.
I agree. You know, just to add to that list of quarterbacks being taken number one overall that haven't panned out, you know, I'm a Notre Dame guy, so Brady Quinn, you know, in my opinion, well, Jimmy Clausen was not that good, but Brady Quinn was in the Heisman conversation 2 years in a row, you know, finished runner-up, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, when you're talking about a guy that was in the Heisman conversation, you know, at the thing, you know, had an opportunity to win it, and then coming out and just not performing. RG3's another guy. He wasn't a number one overall pick.
He was number two behind Andrew Luck.
But, you know, it's another guy, quarterback that didn't pan out. Matt Leinart, Heisman Trophy winner at USC. That guy is terrible. He's doing pre and post game shows for college football on Fox, you know.
Sam Bradford, number one overall pick to the St. Louis Rams. He didn't pan out.
Terrible for the Rams.
And the number two overall pick, do you know the number two overall pick in that draft?
That year?
Yeah.
I do not.
Ndamukong Suh. Went to Detroit.
And now he's with the Rams. So it was destiny fulfilled.
Well, now he doesn't have a team.
That's true, he's a free agent.
Yes, he is.
But yeah, I mean, I know you're excited for the NFL draft. I probably won't watch it. To tell you the
truth.
Not
even for your Notre Dame guys?
They got
Tillery going in the first round.
I think Tillery's good. You know, he's a good interior lineman. He's not Quentin Williams. He's not Cleland Furl. He's not Dexter Lawrence. He's not Ed Oliver from Houston. But he's good. You know, he is a consistent guy. He's not going to be that big playmaker. He was his sophomore year at Notre Dame. Junior year, he kind of fell off. Last year, played really well on one of the best defensive fronts in the country, a four-man defensive front. So he's a late first, early second overall pick. I'm not sad that he's not in the high first round. I do think Julian Love should be in the first round conversation. Miles Boykin, another guy, that a wide receiver at Notre Dame that's performed well at the combine.
He's projected to go early second round.
Yeah, at the pro days and stuff. Drew Tranquil's another guy that's like a rover type guy. He could play. You know, he was a safety coming in, put on some pounds, played linebacker. He's a great linebacker. Best triple option linebacker you'll ever find, which they don't run in the NFL anymore. But I think all those guys are pretty solid picks, and I guess we'll just have to see how it pans out tomorrow.
If for some reason Chris Ballard, the general manager of the Colts, is listening, draft J.R. Arcega-Whiteside. We need that big end zone wide receiver. They can just lob one up too. And honestly, no one was better in the country than Arcega-Whiteside when it came to those end zone fade routes. So much fun to watch. I'm going to miss him and K.J. Costello just airing it out to each other. Now Costello's got to throw it to Colby Parkinson, which he's good, but he's no Arcega-Whiteside.
That's true. Well, we're going to take a quick break. In 2 minutes, we have our interview coming up right here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Hopefully, you're not listening to this all by yourself. Welcome back, everybody, listening to Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Well, we have Scott Waterman here with us on the phone. Scott, can you hear me?
Of course.
Hey, there we go. Wow, it sounds really good. How you doing, Scott?
I'm doing great. Doing well. Can't believe the year's almost over.
I know. And you've been pretty busy the last couple of weeks. And, we'll just start by asking you, like, where are you right now? What have you been doing today? I know you've been super busy.
For those of our fellow hot in the igloo listeners that may not know, earlier this week I was offered and accepted the head coaching position at Academy of Art, So it's been a bittersweet few days, obviously. Excited as all can be to finally become a head coach and take on my own program, but also really sad to have to say goodbye to the guys on the team. Obviously, Coach Harris, one of my best friends, and not being able to work with him anymore, and just, you know, the entire Dominican community. I know it's been it was a tough decision, but at the end of the day, you know, my goal has always been to become a head coach, and just an opportunity you can't pass up.
I know it's been bittersweet for us here at Penguin Radio. We've done so much with you, especially all the halftime interviews and you being generous enough to come on our show here. And can you tell us what the conversation was like? You and Booker have been friends for, you know, such a long time. You know, I'm sure it was bittersweet, like you said, but, you know, definitely no hard feelings in that regard with your, you know, aspirations to become a head coach. You know, I'm sure the first thing out of his mouth was to congratulate you like the rest of us.
Yeah, he was, you know, he's been supportive through the whole thing. He definitely reached out to Art on my behalf and, you know, has been a huge supporter and, you know, a testament to him that, you know, his mentorship and leadership has helped me get to this spot. So I owe a lot to him and for him giving me the opportunities that he did over the last 2 years to help be a significant part of this program. And like I told our guys, the only regret I had is that we weren't able to accomplish our goals this year. But I know that next year I'm going to be probably on the opposite side of watching them do what we had planned to do. So, you know, the program's in really good hands. And with the strong core guys we have returning, you know, or the Dominican will have returning, if he still fresh on day two over at Academy of Arts, still going with that Dominican pronoun. But it's, you know, going to be great to watch them have success. And like I told the team and I told Booker, for 364 days and 20 hours, you'll have a huge fan, but for the 4 hours that we play each other next year, we may not know each other.
I don't think you could have put it a better way. Now, you've watched this Academy of Art team now for 2 years, and, you know, they were in the tournament this year, and I'm sure that, you know, that it's all still fresh to you, but can you tell us about, you know, what you're excited looking forward to get going in that program next year?
You know, we've got a good, strong core of returners coming back. And, you know, it's just going to be a matter of filling in some gaps that the seniors lose. So basically the first 2 days on the job here, which were Tuesday and Wednesday, were basically entailed meeting the team, recruiting them back, and then really been starting to hit the recruiting path on guys that can help come in and be impact guys to help the future of the Academy of Art program.
I know it's going to be a lot of fun. Next year, yeah. when you guys are here, you know, with Booker will be sitting to our right, and then you'll be over there to our left, and, you know, we're going to try and steal you away. Maybe you can talk with us, you know, next year when you're here, maybe post-game or pre-game or something like that. That is, if it's allowed.
Yeah, no, anything you guys need, always. Please never hesitate. But the only thing you probably won't get me is at halftime now.
Yeah, head coaches can't come over.
Yeah, well, they can, but I don't know. I may be too much of a wreck now. I actually have to make the decisions. I let Booker be the wreck. I just yell at him of what to do. So now it'll be my opportunity to be the mess.
It sounds great. You know, I know us here at Penguin Radio, Ethan, myself, Soren, Stu, that's all we've been talking about all week is, you know, once we got your email, you know, we like, we got to go see Scott. We got to go tell him congratulations. And that's going to, you know, we're going to miss having him on the show and miss having him at every halftime with all the insight that you give us, all the great information.
Yeah, well, no, I appreciate that. And I'll miss you guys too. But I think the ironic thing that hasn't been touched upon is we actually open up in that tip-off classic at Dominican with Sonoma and San Francisco State. So you actually get to watch my first real collegiate coaching game too.
That's going to be fun. We will definitely be calling that game.
No, perfect.
We'll get
perfect. You guys can. Go ahead. You guys, I think I'll even be on that side, so you guys can even yell at me like everybody else will be.
As long as you don't
a little bit more adversity.
As long as you don't continue to throw the stats at us as a head coach, I guess we'll be okay. Scott, I want to thank you for the quick phone call. I know that you've been super busy all week, and I'll make sure that you get a copy of this. You can listen back to your last appearance on Hot in the Igloo.
No problem. Anytime you guys in the future, never hesitate to reach out. I'll miss you, and I got to come back to campus a few more times, so I'll make sure that we connect. And I think I told you I still owe you guys lunch for that March Madness thing, so we'll make that happen.
All right, we'll make sure that we go to lunch when you're back. Thanks, Scott. Scott Waterman, everybody, the head men's basketball coach at Academy of Art. How does that sound?
It still sounds kind of surreal.
All right, Scott, we'll make sure that we connect before you leave Dominican officially, all right?
All right, great. Thanks, Forrest. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. All right, see you, Scott. Scott Waterman, everybody, and, Ethan, I want to thank you for, letting us use your phone. That sounded like a real interview, didn't it? Whenever you listen to a radio show or a talk show and the guy calls in on the radio.
That sounded great. Gotta love that.
That was probably the coolest interview. I mean, we've had a lot of cool interviews, I think. That one just sounded the most, it felt the most professional to me.
Yeah, that was just enjoyable. And especially with a guy like Scott, who's been on the show many times before and is kind of a staple here for Hot in the Igloo. It kind of hurts to lose him, but you know he's off to bigger and better things. So just wish him the best.
Yeah, I got the email from him and I was thinking, man, that is really cool because everybody wants to be a head coach. Everybody wants to be a head coach. Why wouldn't you want to be a head coach? And I remember him, talking about that and talking about how much, us, getting information from him at halftime, actually helped him with, the things that he wanted to work on as far as, when you're a head coach, you have to address the media, right? That's something that, you don't experience until you're actually a head coach. And I feel like we have kind of given him a upper hand, maybe a step up on doing so and, being in his ear all the time. And, his willingness to come on the show basically at our will is phenomenal.
Yeah. Now we just like he said, that was 4 hours. Those 4 hours.
4 hours in the gym. I actually didn't know. I knew that the tip-off tournament was here, and I knew it was Academy of Art, San Francisco, Sonoma, like it is every year. But, didn't click that Scott was going to be the head coach and that he would probably be sitting right next to us. Now we get to yell at him like we yell at Booker when he won't sit down.
There you go.
That's going to be interesting watching Scott coach his first wow, can you believe that? Scott's been here with us for 2 years. He does everything for Penguin Radio that we ask him to do, and now we're going to call his first professional or his first game as a head coach.
Yeah, that's gonna be fun as long as he makes sure to duck while I'm doing play-by-play, because I am by far the shortest person on this Penguin Radio crew. There's already some seats that I can't sit on because I can't see all the action. So
that's gonna be fun. We have about 20 minutes left, or no, not 20, excuse me, about 10-15 minutes left, Ethan. The one thing that we haven't talked about for the previous 42 minutes, which surprises the heck out of me, is baseball.
I know. Isn't that weird?
I know. It seems like we try and save it to the end because we don't want to make the whole show about baseball, and then we just run out of stuff to talk. We run out of time, and we have too much stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I applaud ourselves, though. We talked about football for about 20 minutes.
Yeah, that was impressive.
That was impressive.
On both of our parts.
Yeah, because I don't know college football. You don't know NFL, and that's the beauty of the NFL draft.
If we didn't say that, nobody would have known, it seemed like.
Hey, but that's the beauty of the NFL draft. It brings both of them together. And that's what makes it so much fun. The scouting combine I could live without, but even though here and there, depending on like when Andrew Luck was in the scouting combine, watched it. When Christian McCaffrey was in the scouting combine, watched it. Solomon Thomas watched it. That's how big of a Stanford football fan I am. And especially when there's a chance they can go number one overall. Solomon Thomas, number two overall to the San Francisco 49ers a couple years ago. And that's what's so weird about the Niners. I'm not going to go back to it.
We're not going to go back to it.
Every single time the Niners have like a top five pick, they always draft a defensive lineman and half of them don't pan out. It's like just
DeForest Buckner.
Just draft something else and maybe it'll work.
Well, they're going to try Nick Bosa again. So the Tampa Bay Rays, what comes to mind when I say the Tampa Bay Rays?
Alvarado and Lau. Alvarado is probably outside of Jordan Hicks.
That's what you think of?
Yeah.
I think of orange juice.
Oh, Tropicana. Yeah. Okay, I get it. The Trop.
Or the Snellzilla. Or the fact that they actually have a Ray tank in center field.
Which is really cool. But now that you actually start to know their players a little bit more, Jose Alvarado is one of the nastiest relief pitchers in baseball.
Up there with Jordan Hicks, like you said, 104 with sink. Alvarado, everything with movement, and it's hard.
It's just 99 ridiculous. With sink from the left-handed position, which is just ridiculous. And then Brandon Lau, I remember we were at a softball game. It was in between the doubleheader, and I looked at you and Soren O'Connell, and I'm like, who's the second baseman of the Tampa Bay Rays?
And I went, well, not Brad Miller, because he's in the Dodger organization now. So,
and I said, Brandon Lau, and you guys are like, who? Yeah. And not only is he the starting second baseman, but he's batting cleanup for the first place American League East Tampa Bay Rays. Even though they've hit a little bit of a snag, they're probably right now one of the best teams in baseball.
I really like their outfield, and I'll tell you why. I'm a big Kevin Kiermaier fan.
Oh, who isn't? The guy's a wizard with the glove.
He's Kevin Pillar, but better for those Giants fans in the Bay Area listening. He's Kevin Pillar, but better. I'm sorry. He can hit.
He can hit.
Left-handed hitter, center fielder, right? I really, really like him. Tommy Pham, playing left field for them. He was kind of a utility guy for the Cardinals. He played a little second base there. He played some outfield. But then they had Marcell Ozuna now, so why do you need Tommy Pham? Tommy Pham has played really well this year. I don't have his average off the top of my head. I'm sure you can get it before I'm done with my point here. But he's played really well. He's been an integral part of this team. And for me, one of the biggest pickups for Tampa Bay has been Avisaíl García, who's playing right. He was on a White Sox team last year who was crappy. And Avisaíl García, you know, hit more than 20 home runs, drove in more than 80. And he was a free agent. I'm going, man, being an LA Dodgers fan, you know, they did get Pollock. But I'm thinking Avisaíl García, I mean, when you look around the Dodger outfield, they have all center fielders.
And if I look at this correctly, García is actually their DH. Their starting right fielder is actually Austin Meadows, who they got in that Chris Archer trade.
Oh,
he
man.
Leads the team in average. He's batting .351.
Yeah.
And then not only that, but then the Tampa Bay Rays are able to get Glasnow off of the Pirates pitching staff. The guy's been pitching lights out all season long.
And who else did they have? Charlie Morton.
And Charlie Morton has been pitching.
And Blake Snell.
Fantastic. The Tampa Bay Rays are
And they
insane.
Got Zunino from Seattle.
Right here, their top four averages, because they used the opener for that fifth spot. Tyler Glasnow, 1.53 ERA. A month into the season. Blake Snell, 2.54, and that's even with a horrendous start to the season against Houston. He gave up 5 runs in 4 innings or something like that. So that kind of inflates his ERA. Charlie Morton, 3.38, and Chirinos with a 3.55. This team is really good. And especially right now, even though they just got swept by the Boston Red Sox, you got to kick them while they're down. Win as many games as you can while the beast is still asleep.
I really like this team. They have some young guys there too with Duffy and Arroyo. Even if they're not playing every day, you know, Arroyo is a great prospect. In the San Francisco organization. And I just like these guys, man. You know, you get Zunino to catch, you know, from Seattle. You know, Lau also plays first base. Joey Wendell's playing some second base. Wendell's one of those names that maybe not a lot of people, you know, have heard because how long he's been a prospect. Willy Adames is playing short for them. You know, okay, he's not hitting that well, .217, but
his glove is really good.
I really like these guys, man. And, Avisaíl García with Yandy Diaz also, who's a DH. He hit DH for them on Tuesday, yesterday, gave García a day off. I just like these guys, man. They're a bunch of guys that you don't hear a lot about. It's kind of a pick and pull type thing. You know, you get Zunino from Seattle. You know, you got Lau, Meadows from Pittsburgh. Kiermaier's been there for a while. Pham from St. Louis.
And they completely won that Chris Archer trade.
100%. Chris Archer went to the Pirates. They're not going to contend. He hasn't played very well. He was declining when they got rid of him. Great idea.
And then you get Glasnow and Meadows, who have helped your team a bunch. It's not like they've been minor contributors. They are two of the superstars on this team. And then I also really like the Mike Zunino addition because one of his biggest aspects was his power. And he couldn't hit for power at Safeco or T-Mobile Park now. But now you move into a hitter-friendly division in a hitter-friendly stadium like Tropicana Field. The guy's going to launch. It just made sense. So I applaud the Tampa Bay Rays for, I believe they are the team with the lowest salary, and they're just getting it done.
They're getting it done. I mean, Zunino not off to as hot of a start. Two home runs and 11 RBIs. That's pretty good. OPS 732, okay? I mean, he's only hit 237, but an OPS is 732. You know, that's higher than average around the league. I mean, you could say this guy's one of the better catchers in the league. He just is. And whether you like it or not, whether you think he's that good or not, that's the crop of catchers. That's it. He's top six.
Okay, and now I want to give you some of these first place teams, and I want to see what you think about them.
Okay.
The American League West, Houston Astros.
No surprise.
They're getting hot. Jose Altuve is locked in right now. The other day he hit one to the tracks at that launching pad of Minute Maid Park.
It's a bandbox. And you knew he was going to get hot. The question was Correa. To me, there was no question about Altuve. There was no question about Bregman.
Or Springer. Altuve is the one that puts them over everybody else.
Yeah.
The Minnesota Twins.
That's a surprising one to me, but not necessarily when you look at the guys that they picked up in the offseason. Buxton's playing very well right now. Byron Buxton is a spark on that team.
And the thing is, nobody knows anybody. Max Kepler.
Cruz.
Really good right fielder.
Nelson Cruz.
What is his name? Their third baseman is so much fun to watch. The American League East, Tampa Bay Rays. Of course, we just spent a whole 10-minute segment talking about Tampa Bay. We love what they're doing out there. The National League Central, this was my pick. The St. Louis Cardinals leading the National League Central. I called that one. Their pitching staff is too veteran-like. Their bullpen is more all around. Jordan Hicks is probably the nastiest closer in baseball right now. 104 with complete command and then an 86-mile-per-hour slider.
I want to go back to that Twins that you were talking about. Jorge Polanco, right, hitting 372, playing shortstop. But then you have Eddie Rosario, who's playing really well. 10 home runs, 23 RBIs, hitting 274. Marwin Gonzalez.
Oh, yeah.
They got Marwin Gonzalez. They have Nelson Cruz. Kepler in center, like you said. I mean, the pitching is the only place that they're going to end up weathering off. Barrios is really good.
Barrios is a legit ace for that team in the Central, especially right now. Cleveland off to a slow start, but they did just get Kipnis. They did just get Lindor back to start the season for those guys. So that could be something that Cleveland Indians fans could look forward to. And especially, I don't know about Minnesota's staying power because of the pitching, like you just mentioned. Their pitching is not that strong. It's good enough to win games with how stacked their lineup is, but eventually your pitching needs to carry you over the top.
Here's a bold prediction. You're talking about St. Louis being your pick. Chicago, who's my pick, is 11-10. They're in third place in that division. Pittsburgh is second. I don't think they're going to stick around. Cincinnati hasn't proven to be what they wanted to be after all the offseason signings. And Milwaukee at 500. You know what? Milwaukee, I think, is going to be below 500 on the road.
Below
500 on the road. Christian Yelich is carrying the Brewers right now. And he only hits at home. Just the facts, dude. I mean, if people aren't agreeing with me, go look at his numbers, man. He's hitting like crap on the road. He can't hit.
All of his numbers have come at home. All 13 of his home runs have come at home. Against the St. Louis Cardinals, he has something crazy like 9 home runs and 15 RBIs. So that's a big one. The St. Louis Cardinals, that lineup, Paul Goldschmidt's. We've seen Paul Goldschmidt firsthand when he played
many
for Arizona.
Years, for many years.
And when he gets hot, he can carry a team by himself. And then you pair him with a Matt Carpenter. You pair him with a Marcelo Zuna. Those guys all together.
Harrison Bader.
It's dangerous. Paul DeYoung.
Paul DeYoung.
Good name.
Only
to
when his eyes are working.
That's Tommy Pham.
Him too.
National League East, the New York Mets.
Surprising. 100%. Zach Wheeler, first guy to throw a ball over 100 miles an hour and hit a ball over 100 miles an hour in his home run the other night. The rotation struggling. DeGrom, MRI, not good. You know, if he goes down, the Mets can kiss their season bye-bye. You know, the only good spot for the Mets right now is Pete Alonso.
On my fantasy team. Great pickup.
Yeah.
Philadelphia Phillies in second place. Only one game over 500.
Not surprising to me. One game over 500 is Atlanta was my pick, I believe. Either Atlanta or Philly to win the division. They were 1-2 for me. Atlanta surprising me a little bit. Philly, not so much. The Mets, big surprise.
I think Edwin Diaz has helped them a ton.
Yeah, he's my closer. Them a ton. My closer in fantasy. Seems like every other day I'm getting points from that guy. So if the Mets can keep it up, then yeah.
And then of course Miami, not a surprise. They came into the season as the worst team in baseball. They're going to end the season as the worst team in baseball.
Yes.
The Washington Nationals. A lot of people had high hopes because they had a.
I don't understand.
They had a smart offseason. They didn't have a big splashy offseason. They had a smart offseason.
I agree with that, but people saying that they're going to win the division are out of their mind.
Yeah, they're still not that great. I mean, you still have Max Scherzer to anchor that rotation with Steven Strasburg right behind him. But your bullpen is still a question mark, and your lineup is hit or miss.
Anthony Rendon's the best player in that lineup, and Rendon has had some issues as of this week. I would know because I'm a fantasy owner, and I do have him on my team, and he's day-to-day right now. He's hitting .371 with 6 home runs and 18 RBIs, but if you're not playing, you can't hit, and you can't be productive in the part of the offense. I think Juan Soto has let a couple of people down this year.
Yeah, and for me, Atlanta was my most overrated team. They haven't really let me down, staying at .500.
Yeah,
Their pitching rotation is just, what is it?
It's nothing.
And their bullpen is non-existent as well. Their lineup is really good. They probably have one of the best pure lineups in baseball with Freddie Freeman, Ozzie Albies, Ronald Acuna. That lineup is good. Yeah, their good. Pitching is just not there yet. The National League West, Los Angeles Dodgers.
It's not surprising, but what is surprising is how close it's been. 15-10, I believe, is the record right now. 25 games in. The biggest thing that stands out to me is Justin Turner not hitting well. He's hitting .270, but for Justin Turner, who hit over .300 a lot, you know, for a majority of the time that he played last year because he was out for 60 games. He hasn't hit a home run yet. That surprises me. He's the only guy on the active roster that hasn't hit a home run. I mean, you're talking about guys coming off the bench hitting .400. And Justin Turner, starting third baseman, hitting .270, hasn't hit a home run. You know, just hit his fourth double the other day. Yeah, I mean, Chris Bryant coming over to L.A. looks like more and more of a likely option after he's a free agent this year.
Yep, and especially when you look at that Dodgers lineup being heavily carried by Cody Bellinger and his production, Alex Verdugo and his production, and then you look at the guys who you know when they get hot, they get hot. Corey Seager, Justin Turner, A.J. Pollock.
None of them are hot. None of them have hit very well. A.J. Pollock was good for the first 2 weeks, and since then he hasn't hit very well.
And Justin Turner hasn't really gotten it going. Corey Seager right now, kind of inconsistent, will get you a 2 or 3 hit game, then just fall silent for a couple games.
It's understandable, though, I think, coming off of his injury. You know, he hit well for the first week, which made him feel good. Just think of how it would have been if he were hitting .200 after the first week.
Austin Barnes got off to a scorching hot start and has simmered down exponentially. I think he's like 5 for his last 49.
It's been the outfield. Pollock, Verdugo, Bellinger, Peterson.
It's Peterson, Bellinger, Verdugo right now that's carrying that Dodgers offense.
Biggest surprise to me this season by far has to be Cody Bellinger. I watch the Dodgers every day. I know how good Cody Bellinger can be. I did not think that he would be this good age 23 season throughout the first month. I just didn't. You know he's going to hit 35 home runs. That's a given. He's done it, right? Rookie of the year. He's going to hit at least 25 home runs, okay? The consistency I didn't see coming. If you were to ask me if Cody Bellinger could hit over .420 for a month, I'd say you're out of your mind. Maybe .320. He's probably a career .275 guy.
I think about .265. I think last year what we saw from Cody Bellinger is what I thought we'd get for the rest of his career.
Yeah.
.260, 25 homers, and about 70 RBIs.
That's good.
That's a great player.
That's good. I mean, he that's top tier in the league. But the Dodgers are having their cake and eating it too right now with Cody Bellinger.
Cody Bellinger batting .424 with 11 home runs and about 30 RBIs. Has the highest OPS in baseball and also has the most hits in baseball.
And he's the best at everything.
And you might say, well, he might only be playing against right-handed pitchers because the Dodgers like the platoon. Not with Cody Bellinger anymore. The guy hit a grand slam off of Madison Bumgarner straightaway center at Dodger Stadium.
And went yard off Josh Hader, arguably the toughest lefty closer or relief pitcher in the game.
So Cody Bellinger definitely turning a lot of heads. And last year, his big problem, huge loop in his swing.
Yep.
Swinging under the fastballs up in the zone, right down the middle and at the knees. He just couldn't hit a fastball.
He's figured it out, man. He's flattened that swing out, tucked that elbow in, bent arm, home runs. Bellinger has power for days.
But, of course, one of the most fun Dodgers to watch this season has been Alex Verdugo. The man 100%. Just has an energy like no other. Batting over 400 in pitch hit situations, still batting over 300 on the season, has come up clutch plenty of times to gain the respect of many Dodger fans.
Yep, yep. Ugh, God, we're out of time. Are you serious? I want to talk to you more about how Cody Bellinger surprising me, but not really, because I expected it, but not this early in his career.
No, neither have I.
Bittersweet last show of the semester right here. We're going out to Pristine. What a song title. Excuse me, what a group title, an artist to go out to, Pristine. I feel like that's been our show all semester. Pretty pristine. Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. Hot in the Igloo. Ethan Estrada and Forrest Hunt here with you this semester and probably next semester.
Yeah, I'll definitely be back. I'm looking forward to it.
We'll be back. Have a great summer. We'll see you in the fall.